Good afternoon, Ark. How you doing today? It is a great day. Come on in here. We're going to close the doors. You can come forward. It doesn't matter. Reserve seating. Scoot to the middle if you can so somebody can kind of get in next to you over there. We're in for the last app session. It could be the best app session because you have the privilege of listening to Mekon Carter. He is an incredible speaker. He mentioned as he hosted 7-on-7, his 7-on-7 a couple years ago. I was in the audience. I still remember it. Word for word, such a powerful moment for the Ark to hear. And I hope, please, will you share just something of that today with us, that kind of wisdom? Today we are learning about duplication. And can I just go to the Bible real quick with you guys? In Mark chapter 10, there's a man named Bartimaeus. You guys remember him? And he's calling out to Jesus. The people told him to be quiet. And Jesus says, whoa, call him. And then he made a decision. When Jesus called him, he took his cloak and he put it to the side, and he chased after Jesus. He said, I do not need this cloak anymore. This is my old life. This is my old identity. This is the way I used to do things, but I'm getting a new life and a new identity in Christ. Today, there is an old way of doing things that we need to take off. If we're going to live in the world of duplication, we got to take off some old way of thinking. And today, we are going to learn that with Mekon Carter. Can you give it up a real loud round of applause for my friend?
What's up, everybody? You ready to jump into this today so we can get on to breaking and refreshing? I was told they had Red Bulls for everybody, so if anyone wants a Red Bull, I'm lying. I am the Red Bull. Here we go. Going to be talking about duplication, and the subtitle was The Fastest Way to Grow Your Church. And it's kind of a lie because you can't grow the church. Like, the church's growth is Jesus' responsibility. He grows the church. But there is something that you and I can do, and that's to grow the people. It's people building. The responsibility of the church is on Jesus. The responsibility of the people is on us. We're supposed to build and equip the people for the work of the Lord. So I want to talk about the fastest way to grow that, because we can't handle that. And it's not your pastor's responsibility. It's not a certain team leader's responsibility. It's all of our responsibility. And duplication is the byproduct in which that happens. So whether you're a church plant, whether you're dreaming of a church one day, whether you pastor 5,000 people, whether you pastor 50 people, whether you're involved of the infant team or just the creative team, duplication is the only way it's going to grow. You will not grow it wishing it. You will not grow it praying for it. You will not grow it thinking about it. You will not grow it through someone announcing someone to come to your team or your organization or your location. A social media post won't grow it. Mailers won't grow it. A door hanger won't grow it. The only way it happens is through duplication. So I'm going to really talk about that, because I think a lot of people, they expect the church to grow without any involvement. Like, we prayed it in. Where's the harvest? It's all around us. What does he say? He said, pray for the laborers. Basically, people who will get to work. Building a church is spelled W-O-R-K. It's work. If you're a sissy, you won't build the church. If you think you can just pray it in, you won't build the church. If you're expecting someone else to do it, you won't build the church. It's spelled W-O-R-K, and that means you and I got to get to work. Now, somebody's like, who's this guy anyway? Okay, let me give you background. So, I'm not as young as I look. Okay? I'm going to be 39 this summer. Been married 19 years. I have a kid in Highlands College, and I'll be celebrating 13 years of ministry this October, okay? So I don't come up here with no experience or just, I'm just wishing something. I took over a church that had a lead pastor for 26 years, so I know about transition. We started with 50 people in the worst block of our city. We're now multi-location and multi-thousand. What I'm telling you is not, I'm in a city no one knows. It's called Yakima. You never heard of it. It's the honeymoon destination of the world. I'm lying. No one comes there. Everyone's trying to leave there, which means if you're going to build something in a place where people are trying to leave, you got to duplicate. You got to duplicate. I want to talk about duplication. I can't guarantee that what I'm going to tell you is going to grow your church. Can't guarantee that. If you thought you were coming here and you're going to break the 500 mark, you're going to break the 1,000 mark, you're going to break the 10,000 mark, it's probably not going to happen because of this. But what I can guarantee you that if you do this, you will be building people that build people. You got to be very intentional of what you're building. I'm not building people to build my platform. I'm not building people to build our social media account. I'm not building people to build what I feel like God called me to do. I'm not building people to build our brand. I'm not building people to build our community. I'm not building people to build our thing. I'm not building people so that I can get notoriety. I'm not building people so I can get speaking engagements. I'm not building people so I can make the top 100 fastest growing churches in America. No, we build people to build people. We build people to build people. No hidden motives, no hidden objectives. There's no angle. It's simply, I'm trying to build you because I believe that God wants me to build the best you, and I need you to do the exact same thing for every single person you meet. We build people to build people. So how do we do that? So if you're going to duplicate this thing of duplication, what I'm not saying is carbon copy yourself. We don't need any more of you. You are too much to handle already. You are all the world ever needed of you. We don't need any more carbon copies, right? There doesn't need to be any. Chris Hodges is a breed of his own. We don't need any more Pastor Chris's. We don't need any more Mekon Carters. We don't need any more of you. What we do need duplicated is heart. We need the sound of the church, the sound of a lover of people, the sound of grace. We need the sound duplicated, and we need the vision duplicated. The vision, what we're seeing, what God is revealing throughout the earth through his leaders. We need the heart duplicated, we need the sound duplicated, and we need the vision duplicated. So I'm going to give you three ways that we do that, how we duplicate it. How do we make sure we're duplicating people? I get asked all the time, how do you build leaders? How do you get people to get involved in your ministry? How do you get people to volunteer? All these things boil down to duplication. How do I take the heart, the vision, and the sound that's inside of me and help other people carry that and live that? How do I get more people to work in kids ministry? I just can't find anyone to work in kids ministry. How do we get more people to give? How do we get more people to serve? How do we get more people to invite? How do we get more people involved? How do we get more people on the dream team? Like all of us have those. How do we get more musicians? How do we get more drummers? How do we get more guitar players? How do we get more creative people? How do we get more people that are going to be outreach driven? All of us, no matter what role you're in, you will always need more people. Would you agree? And I'm just telling you, the amount that you think you need is not enough. It's not enough. Because eventually, when you create margin, by the way, this is a side note, if you really want to grow your church, you got to create margin in two areas. You got to create margin with finances. You got to have the financial means to move when momentum shifts and God opens a door. You need finances and you need people. You got to have the leadership capacity to carry whatever you can purchase. If you do not have the finances, I don't care how many people you have, you can't pay for a building you ain't got money for. If you got the money, I don't care how much money you have, you can't occupy it with leadership if you have not developed the people. Okay? So you have to duplicate, and no matter how many people you think you need now, in 6 months from now, it won't be enough. I remember our children's team would tell, Pastor, we need like 30 more volunteers. Okay, I'm going to help you get 30 more volunteers. Give them 30 more volunteers, not enough. I remember, like, I can go back to old vision things that we would do, like, this year, let's double our serve team from 40 people to 80 people. And I remember, like, Wow, if we could just get to 80 people on the volunteer team. Woo! It takes more than that to run one opportunity. One service. We can't even do it with less than 80 people. We can't even do less with 120 people. We can't even get through one service with less than 120 people. I got more hosts than 80 people for one service now. They're everywhere. We got them in the parking lot. We got them at the front door. We got them at the back door. We got them in between. We got them at the water fountain. We got them as they walk kids into the kids ministry. We got them when they walk into the door. They're seating you. We got them hosting you online. We're everywhere. You will never have enough. And if you want to be effective, if you want growth to be a byproduct of your life, you have to learn how to master duplication. The first thing we do, we see this in the heart of Jesus. I'm going to show you through scripture. I'm just going to point to a couple places. You can read it for the sake of your own time. I'm just going to pass by them so you can see it. Is Jesus is a master duplicator. How many people would give me an amen? Amen. He took the heart, the sound, and the vision that was in him. He placed it into people. And here you and I are now carriers of that. He has been duplicating. He ain't even on earth anymore. He's still doing it. He's gone. It's still happening. Okay? So he's a duplicator. I'm going to try to tell you what he did, what captured you, what captured me, and how we can capture other people in that process. And it's a three-step process. Very simple. You might not have ever thought about it, but it's very simple. And I'm going to tell you, you suck at one of them. At least. Some of you suck at all three. If you're going to grow, you got to get better. You got to address your weakness. You got to be self-aware. You got to admit your blind spots because eternity's at stake. So we can't just say, it's not my skill set. We've got to jump over what we say so we can be what God has called us to be. Oh, you thought you came to a teaching workshop. I don't do that. I yell. So the first thing we see Jesus do, we're going to be in the book of Matthew chapter 3. This is where Jesus, he sees Peter and Andrew, and he sees them fishing. They ain't caught nothing. He tells them what to do, and he invites them on this mission. He says, hey guys, I know you fish for fish, but let me teach you how to fish for people. This would be the stage that I would call recruit. Now, if you were in the grow session with Pastor Chris, he'd say, we don't recruit. And I would agree with him. Because I don't think of recruiting the same way that many people think of recruiting. They think of, let me side hustle you to get to my thing. Let me smooze you so it can benefit me. Let me wine and dine you so you can get on my team so I can win a championship. Has no invested interest in the individual. Has a motive that's built for me. I need workers, get on my team. I need singers, join my worship. Because it's what I'm doing. When I'm talking about recruiting, I'm talking about recruiting people to what God has in store for them. And my job, what Pastor Chris would say, is help them discover their potential in God. You have to learn how to recruit. And many people suck at recruiting. Jesus had this infectious way to walk up to people and be like, man, what are you doing with your life? Come with me. I'm going to teach you how to fish. He probably walked up to Matthew, the tax collector, says, hey, you collect taxes? Let me teach you how to collect people. He found a common ground, common interest to really have this way about him to recruit. And what it is adding people to the team, not adding people to your team. There's a difference. It's adding people to the team. See, when you're small, this is what it is. It's like, as a recruiter, when you're small, when your church first starting out, you recruit everybody. Everybody. You got one arm, recruit it. We just need anybody. I remember the day when I stepped into being the senior pastor and I looked around and said, okay, God, how am I going to build it? He's like, well, anyone I send you, you build them. Like, I was told, but I felt like from the Lord, that I wasn't supposed to build it from the outside in. That I really felt like God told me, Mekon, don't hire anyone from the outside. You build it with whatever I gave you. I looked around, I said, Lord, this is what you gave me. He goes, yeah. I gave you a wand, but your job is to turn it into a weapon. I gave you a piece of steel. Your job is to forge it into a sword. So they might not look like anything special right now, but with a little bit of heat and a little bit of hammering, they'll go from a wand to a weapon. Quit asking God to send you the latest, greatest singer. Just turn that wand into a weapon. Stop asking God to give you someone with some business sense. Just turn the wand into a weapon. This is the reality that, because some of us are always looking for an outside source to fix an internal issue. And we've got to take what God has given us, and our responsibility is to recruit them to the dream that God is putting inside of all of us. When you're small, you recruit anybody. Now, the larger you get, I'm trying to make this scalable, is the larger that you get, the focus changes. Like now, I'm not recruiting everyone to do something in our church. I have to be more selective, and my focus has to be on gifting, skill set. So the larger you get, you're still recruiting. You can, like, I guess what I'm saying is you can't stop recruiting. You can't afford to stop recruiting. You got to keep noticing. You got to keep looking. You got to see people under the tree. You got to see people on the boat. You got to see people at the booth. No matter what Jesus was doing, he was constantly looking. And the Bible talks about way more disciples than just the 12 that he selects and gets named. Which means he was constantly going, come on, you too. Yeah, yeah, you too. He kept gathering, kept collecting, even so much that he has a conversation with this guy named Saul. Later turns his name to Paul. That was Jesus, still in recruitment mode. Going, I need someone to take this to the Gentiles. Come on, Paul, you're it. I see something in you that no one else sees. And I'm not calling you to my thing, I'm calling you to our thing. That we would infiltrate the system of humanity with the antidote, which is through happens to be me, Jesus Christ. I am the answer for the solution for humanity. This is Jesus's byproduct. We have to start looking for the right people to add to the bottom line. Let me say it another way. We don't recruit people to a job. We recruit people to connect them to a mission. I'm not looking for someone to pass out bulletins. I'm not looking for someone to hit the up arrow on ProPresenter. I'm not looking for someone to play the multi-track on the band. I'm not looking for someone to play an instrument. If that's all you do, we lose. I can hire that out. I'm not looking for someone to do a website. I can pay for that. I'm not looking for a good musician. I can go find me one. I'll pay for that. I'm not looking for someone who can just do a job. I'm looking for people that will build people. Do you see the difference? The thing that will stop the growth of your church is finding people just to do work. Because it will stunt everything you're doing. You have to have people that will duplicate themselves and to build people. So how do you recruit? Let me say a couple things. I'll give you three things that I think help in the recruiting process. It's not the only way, but the first thing is you got to get their ear. You got to get their ear. You got to get them to hear what you're saying. You got to do something that they'll want to lend their ear. Because if you never get the ear, you'll never get the feet. If you don't get the ear, you will never get feet. What I'm saying is, if you can't gain access to speak into them, you will never be able to get them to move from point A to point B. You've got to get their ear. That's the only way to their feet. Well, how do you get their ear? You get the ear through how people feel. People hear better when they feel better. People hear better when they feel better. Have you ever noticed that, like, someone that has done something to you emotionally that makes you feel something, you feel loved, valued, appreciated, when they say something, whether it's corrective or suggestive about your life, it's well received, right? I felt good. Thank you. I'm so glad that you brought that to my attention. But from people that you haven't felt any of that, it's like, shut up. Who are you? They could say the right thing. Have you ever had someone that just got on your nerves that gave you good financial advice? You didn't listen to one word they said because they just got on your nerves. Like, you can walk into a church. This is why the atmosphere of our churches need to be so intentional, because people hear better when they feel better. So when you walk into a facility and you're celebrated from the moment you get on there, then you're going to hear what I have to say because you realize that you're the most valuable asset in the room. If I don't make people feel like they matter, then nothing I say is going to matter. If they feel like they're just being tolerated in our environments, then they're not going to listen to anything I say because no one, like, that's why Disneyland is the happiest place on earth, because they're all about making you feel something. And when you feel better, you hear better. The way to get to people's heart is by encouragement, generosity, noticing, speaking to their potential. This is what Jesus did, right? He gets there, he steps, he invites himself into their world. He says he sees a boat. If you go to Luke chapter 5, he says he sees a boat on the side of the shore. He steps into the boat. Guess whose boat it was? It was Peter's. He says, I'm just coming in. I'm going to jump into your world, Peter. He gets into Peter's world, and then what does he do? He blesses Peter's world. Peter, you've been fishing? Throw it on the other side. What happens? Peter catches a fish so much that it takes two boats to bring it in. And then Peter's awestruck. Oh, my goodness. I can't even believe it. I'm in the presence of God Almighty, and I'm not good enough to be here. He doesn't say you're not good enough. He doesn't say anything that. He just says, you want fish for people? I'm pretty sure Peter heard better because he felt better. When he says, I'm not good enough, Jesus didn't go, you're right. He says, let's not deal with that right now, Peter, because you got a lot you're going to have to work through, and I'm going to have to do a lot with you. So let's not deal with how you feel. Let's not deal with how you see yourself. Let me tell you what I see. I see something big in you. You want to go change the world, Peter? Come on, just follow me. And the Bible says as soon as they touched the shore, boom, Peter left everything. I'm out. And then you go, well, how come no one wants to be on my team? How come no one wants to do what we're doing? Don't they know we're trying to change the world? Yeah, but you haven't started changing their world. So why would they want to help you change the world? Until you can access who you are to build them, they will never want to step over to helping you build what God has called you to build. Until you take the time to say, my investment is in you, not my thing, not my dream. You are the thing. You are the dream. So let me help you be the best you that you can be. So that means whether or not you ever serve, whether or not you ever sign up, whether or not you ever applaud, whether or not you ever give, I've already made up my mind that I'm gonna bless this boat. Jesus was fully convinced that he was gonna give the fish even if Peter never left the boat with him. Some of us, we're like Kirby vacuum salesman or Avacare or whatever. We invite you to the house just so we can sell you the product. Instead of saying, no, I came here literally for you not to buy anything, but for me to build you. When you get their ear, you'll get their feet. So stop asking people to do a job. Why don't you do yours and start building there? That's our job, to build people. We do our job to build people, and then they reciprocate it by going, I want to be on that team. That's what Jesus did. You got to get their ear. Secondly is you got to invite them to the journey and not your journey. If you want to be a good recruiter, you got to invite them to the journey and not your journey. Hey, this is what I'm doing. Love to have you come along. Who wants to do that? Nobody. Here's the journey. We get to be part of the greatest thing on the face of the planet. Happens to be the local church. Jesus is building it. He's coming back for it. He died for it. He's going to return for it. What an amazing honor that we all get to do something in his church. You want to help be a part of what Jesus is building? It's not, hey, you want to help build what I'm building? Want to help be a part of my team? No. That's the team. You want to be a good recruiter? You invite people to the journey, not your journey. And then the last thing you got to do is you got to show them what they'd miss out on. What would you miss out on? This is the greatest thing that good communicators do. They paint the picture so well, and they help you see what you would be missing out on if you didn't do it. Like, I'm pretty sure that some of the disciples, they saw Jesus in action, and they saw the events that he was doing, and they felt like, if I don't do this, I wonder what fishing for people I'll miss out on if I do this. If I stay in this boat, which I can, It's where I've always been. It's what I've always done. If I stay at my job, it's what I've always... If I just keep my Sundays to my family and I could just go home and still sit on the couch and watch my football, that's what I know. What you've got to do is stop trying to get people to do something and show them what they're missing out on if they don't. It's like, yeah, you could go home. You could be a part. You could go watch ESPN. But I'm just telling you, like... You grew up without a father, right? Yeah, I didn't have a dad. You know, well, there's some kid without a dad that's coming this weekend, and he needs someone like you to be what you didn't have. So you can stay home and watch football, but I promise you that 7-year-old boy, he's going to wake up knowing one day that, man, there was this man his name John, and John invested in me, and I'm a different man. I knew how to be a good godly father. Now, you don't have to do that. If you don't want to do that, you can stay home if you want to, but it's available. You see what I just did? Some of you are like, man, I need to sign up at his church. I know. Because you've got to show people what they are missing out on. That's the power of recruiting. It's what Jesus did. Hey, Matthew, you can keep collecting this money. You'll make a lot of money doing that. But man, that's not going to matter at the end of the day. Come with me. Let me teach you how to collect people. What does Matthew do immediately as he leaves the tax collector booth? He throws a party at his house. With who? All his notorious friends. Where does he go from collecting money to collecting? Because Jesus showed him what he would be missing out on. You can have all these dollars, but it won't make sense. Come on, somebody. You need to get. That's why you're here. Because you felt like you'd miss out. If you didn't do what God put in your heart, I couldn't wake up the next day. I went, these people get on my nerves. I know, that's church. Every church. If you don't have a church where people get on your nerves, it's coming. It's coming. But we wake up going, man, I'd miss out on that. I would have missed out on the people's marriages restored. I would have missed out on the people getting delivered from addictions. I would have missed out of young people finding spiritual family. I would have missed out of people's purpose. I don't want to. Miss out? That's the power of recruitment. The second thing that you have to learn how to do is you got to go from recruiting. Now, some of you are exceptional recruiters. For many of us, that's not our sweet spot. If you're not a good recruiter, I'm telling you, you need to shake off your weirdness. You need to shake off your sales pitch. You need to shake off intimidation. You need to shake off insecurity. And you've just got to keep inviting people to the mission. Keep inviting and keep investing into people's lives, knowing that not everyone will say yes. If you stopped recruiting or helping people discover who they're supposed to be because people told you no, well, there is no sales organization in the world that ever got anywhere by quitting because someone said no. This is a thing we're doing our whole life. We're constantly calling people to the cross. But the second thing is not just recruiting, or not just recruiting, but rallying. You got to learn how to rally. Say rally. Now, Jesus does this in chapters 4-7 in the book of Matthew. He does the Beatitudes, where he says things like, blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor. He starts introducing a new way to live. You keep on reading, he deals with anger. He deals with adultery. He says, hey, you know, they say that don't commit adultery. He said, but if you look at someone like that, you've committed in your heart. Let me just talk about your heart. He deals with adultery. He deals with divorce. He deals with loving your enemies. If you only love the people that love you back, how good is that? He goes on to talk about prayer and fasting. He talks about generosity, giving. He speaks to true discipleship and building your house. He ends it by building your house on the rock. Here's what happens in the rally. In the rally, this is where you don't just give information, but impartation. Jesus wasn't just up there just doing a PowerPoint presentation. He got his disciples and said, hey, we're going to the top of the mountain. They get up on the top of the mountain, the Sermon on the Mount. He talks about the Beatitudes. He starts listing a new way to live. He says, everything you've learned, I'm going to teach you to do it countercultural to what you learned. It's going to feel not normal. It's going to feel weird. It's going to feel out of the ordinary, but you're not ordinary anymore. And so I've got to teach you to see a new pattern. See, you got to learn how to paint the picture. Say, paint the picture. This is where a good person who rallies can really paint a vivid picture of the possibility. You can't do that in recruiting. In recruiting, you're trying to build appetite. In recruiting, you're trying to gain interest. But once you have attention, now you got to do the hard work, which is paint a picture that is so clear that they see exactly what you were talking about before I came. This is the art of not just painting a picture, but introducing a new way. Or here's another way, breathing life into dry bones. What you're doing in the rally process is you're breathing life into dry bones. You didn't know that you could be this kind of person, but I'm gonna teach you how to be it. You didn't know that you could live this kind of way, but I'm gonna teach you how to live this kind of way. You didn't know that you have this capacity in you, but I'm gonna speak this capacity in you. You didn't know that you could be that kind of father, but I'm gonna breathe that in you. You didn't know that you could be that kind of leader, but I'm gonna breathe that in you. You didn't know that what you were holding on was making you miss out. I'm gonna teach you how to let it go. You didn't know that you could go to that kind of height. I'm gonna teach you how to get there. See, you paint a picture of the possibility and you breathe life into dry bones. This happens in the rally. Most people, when they rally, they think that's just direction. Hey guys, we're gonna change the world and it's gonna be awesome. That did nothing for nobody. Jesus gets up there, he starts introducing some new themes, some new systems, some new ways, some new ideas that are totally counterculture to what they were doing. And what ends up happening is, in the rally, you give culture. This is who we are. In the rally, that's where you give culture. This is who we are, guys. We're not like everyone else. We're not trying to do this for fame. We're not trying to do this for fortune. We're not like everyone else. The rest of the world, this is how they do it. I know you've seen the government. I know everyone hears about power and money. That's not us. Blessed are the poor. He wasn't saying be poor. He was saying change your perspective. They were taught eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. He's like, hey, look, we're not going to be like that. That's not us. I'm not saying you won't have enemies. I'm not saying it won't hurt. I'm just saying, no, we just do it differently. This is where you give culture. In our house, we honor. Like my pastor says, we honor up, down, and all around. In our house, we're generous. In our house, we will always put more effort into reaching the lost than keeping the found. We leave the 99 every time. In our house, we refuse to let this rescue mission turn into a yacht club. In our house, we will celebrate every person and every story. It all matters. In our house, we embrace unity. We embrace diversity while maintaining unity. In our house, this is how we do it here. I know how you learn how to do it there, but let me teach you how to do it here. In our house, it's all about him. We love him and what he loves. In our house, this is what we do. This is who we are. And when you paint that picture, it now empowers them to be carriers, because you, in the rally, you help them see the blessing, but you hand them the burden. In the rally, you help them see the blessing. Man, our God's amazing. Yes, Peter, do you see that catch? Do you see what happened? Yeah, okay, your turn. We hand them the blessing, or we help them see the blessing, or we hand them the burden. We say, this is what we carry. This is what Elijah did to Elisha. He walked by him, he took his coat, and he threw it on Elisha and kept walking. Elisha comes up to him and says, hey, he goes, can I first go to my family and da-da-da-da? He goes, yep, but remember the thing that I did to you. Carry that burden. That mantle's heavy. You're marked for something different. Are you willing to wear that? Are you willing to walk with it? Yeah, God's power is going to be on your life, but you got to carry this burden. See, what you do is, in the context of rally, is this mission must now become their mission. If the mission hasn't become their mission, you have not mastered how to rally yet. You gave information, but no impartation. You didn't take what was in you and throw it on them. You gave them some good ideas. You gave them some good concepts, but you never took who you are and placed it in them. You've got to find the way of taking what's inside you and putting it into their heart. I'm going to give you three ways of how you rally. Number one, you tell the story. You tell the story. Not some fictitious story, not some story you got out of a book that made for a good joke. You tell the story. You tell the story of how your son was in kindergarten and he invited his kindergarten teacher to church, and she didn't come to church all year long because she thought it'd be weird. And your five-year-old son didn't know that the kindergarten church had an ex-husband that they had been separated from 4 years, that used to be a youth pastor, but stepped out of the ministry and started drinking and started sleeping around with other women. Your five-year-old son didn't know that, but he invited that teacher to come to service. She said no. Summertime comes. She finally comes in. She starts bringing the kids. So she tells that ex-separated husband of hers that, hey, you know what? Can you bring the kids to this church every weekend? Because I want them to come to the same spot. So he agrees, yes, I'll come. He sits in the back and cries every weekend. He hates church and loves church. He hates it because he's realizing what he's missing out on, but he loves it because he realized who he's supposed to be. And in a matter of a couple of weeks, not only does he surrender his life to Jesus, but he checks himself into treatment. And while he's in treatment, his separated wife has to come for step 7 about making amends with your friends and family. She comes, they talk it out. She talks to him and says, hey, you know what? When you get out of here, you shouldn't go back to your apartment. I'll let you live in my business or in my basement. The house that you left, the family that you left, these two adopted kids that I've been raising for the past 4 years without you, I'm going to let you come back into my basement and you can sleep in the basement because I want you to be sober more than I want you to have any relationship with us. What they didn't know is in that process, God would mend their marriage. They would get back together. They would adopt 2 more kids. And now he's my online campus pastor. When you tell the story, when you tell the story, it changes something. When you get up on the stage, you say, you know what? Our church is all about reaching lost people. And I know exactly what you're going through. I have a sister that when I first got saved, she didn't want nothing to do with church, didn't want nothing to do with me. Matter of fact, she got online and she talked about how her brother's this special pastor in the city, got the largest church in the city, and can't help her sister. You know, all I do is ask for money. He won't give me no money. Well, she had an alcohol problem and a gambling problem. Of course I'm not giving you money. I'll buy whatever groceries you need. Give me the list. I'll pay your bills directly. Tell me what they are. But I can't give you cash. To the point that my sister would go in and out of jail, traffic drugs, live at the Union Gospel Mission, the women's YWCA, the women's battered shelter. My own sister in my own city, and I got a nice house that got plenty of bedrooms that she could sleep in. I'd go to my mom's house. She'd be 85 pounds. I'd walk in the door. She would turn her back to me, lay on the couch while I have a conversation with my mom for about 2 hours. She wouldn't even look my direction. Wouldn't talk to me. I was the only one that visited her when she was in jail. Had nothing but mean things to say about me on social media. And every week someone would come to my church talking about, yeah, I saw your sister at the bar last night. And some of you are like, well, what kind of church you got? That kind of church. I saw your sister at the bar last night. She was saying, you know, you don't ever want to be there for her. And, you know, Saw her at the casino the other day. This went on and on for at least 7 years of me pastoring the church I pastored. Until one day, she came in. I preached the message. I saw her raise her hand to give her life to Jesus. 2 months later, I got to baptize her. She just graduated our 2-year college at our church. She now works with women that come out of jail. When you tell the story, now I give you the burden because your sister's next. Your family's next. You've got to learn how to tell the story. Don't just talk. Look, like, if it ain't in you, it ain't in you. You will never duplicate something you wish, because you cannot give your kids something you don't have. If you want an invitational church, you better be the biggest inviter. If you want your church to be generous, you better give the most. If you want your church to be big vision, you better have big vision, because you cannot give your kids something you do not have. It's got to be in you. Like, we don't do, church is not our profession. I would do it for free. I did it for free. I was bivocational until our church grew to 1,000. I know the grind. But you, it's got to be part of you. You got to tell a real story. If you don't have a real story, you better get one. Like how I was on Instagram. I scroll through Instagram quite often. You can hate on me if you want. And I saw this girl. She did these 15-second clips. She was singing. 15-second clips. She's singing like Adele. Pipes. She was in high school. She went to my son's high school. And I was like, that Instagram girl, she's bad to the bone. I like that girl. I started praying at our church. I told my staff, I came and I said, I'm going to put 6 things up on the board that I'm praying for. I said, I'm praying for worshipers. I want more worship people in our church. I'm praying for black people. I want more black people in our church. I'm praying for finance. You think I'm crazy? I'm praying for stuff. In my city, we are less than 7.7% African American. I want every single one of them in my church. Praying for it all, right? It's all up on the board. A couple weeks later, I go to this store called Red Robin. It's a restaurant. I don't know if you know what Red Robin is, but it's my favorite place to go. So we go to Red Robin. I walk in. There's the Instagram girl who's an atheist and a druggie for real. And so I get to her. I walk in. I said, hey, you're the Instagram girl. She's like, who are you? I'm like, oh, you don't know who I am. I see you on Instagram. You have an amazing voice. Have you ever been to Together Church? And she's like, no, never been to Together Church. Her friend's like, I have. I got a decal on my car from Together Church. I don't go there anymore, but the decal gets me out of tickets, so I keep it on there. Come on, somebody. All right, I'll roll with you. I'll roll with you. I said, that's cool, that's cool. I said, man, you got a beautiful voice. You need to be on my worship team. She's like, worship team? I said, man, you just need to come. You'd love it. She's like, all right. Didn't think nothing of it. Get down, sit with my son, and he's like, no, Dad, she don't. I'm in my office a couple weeks later. My son comes. He's like, Dad, she was here. She came. 2 weeks later, she had an acid trip, kept her up till 3 o'clock in the morning. She calls one of her friends at 3 a.m. Can you take me to that church? She comes to that church, gives her life to Jesus. A couple weeks later, we baptize her. She is our main worship leader at our downtown campus. Can I just tell you that when you tell the story, you see what happened inside of you? You saw what happened inside of you? You started dreaming for your sister. You started dreaming for your friends. You started dreaming for your family. You started to see your people in your city, because when you tell the story, it rallies something on the inside of us. That's what Jesus was saying. Look at these people. Look at these people. Look what we could do. You tell the story. You share the why. Why do we do it? Here's why we do it. Because it matters. We share the why. I don't have time to talk about all the why. I wish I did, but I'm running out of time. But we share the why. The third thing, we make it personal. Because if you don't make it personal for a person, they'll never make it practical. You have to make it personal or it won't become practical. Here's what I'm saying. You have to talk to them as if it's their granddaughter, their son, their coworker, their neighbor. And then you have to say, okay, will you do it for his grandson? So I'm talking about the mission. I'm saying, hey, wouldn't you want your, you say you have a daughter. She's not living for Jesus yet. Would you do anything to see your daughter come to know Jesus? Would you move to a different location? Would you serve at a different service? Would you serve in the parking lot when it's raining? Would you rock babies? I know you don't like babies, but she's got one. Would you rock her baby if that meant she got Jesus? Would you run a camera if you knew she was watching online? And then when they go, yeah, I go, will you do it for his daughter? Because he's praying for his, like you're praying for yours. And until you make it personal, it will never become practical. If it's just some fictitious person, we don't move. This whole time when I was really reaching my city, every time someone gave their life to Jesus, I saw my sister. I saw my sister. I preached like my sister was coming. I preached like this would be the weekend. It changed what I communicated. It changed how I communicated. It changed the language that I would use. It changed the love that I would demonstrate. It changed the forgiveness that I would extend. I had a person on my mind. And every time someone's family member got saved, I said, mine's next. Mine's next. If you don't make it personal, you'll never make it practical. The third thing you have to do, I wish I had more time. In the rally, it needs to be clearly stated, creatively stated, and consistently stated. You can't just do it one time in the rally. It's over and over and over and over and over. When you're sick of it, they're just getting it. The last thing you do, recruit, rally, the last thing, which is often the hardest thing for people to do, is to release. Matthew 10, 7 and 8, he says this, go and announce to them, he's talking to those disciples that he recruited, that he rallied. He said, go and announce to them the kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cure those with leprosy, cast out demons, give as freely as you received. Here's what he said. What I did in you, do it in them. This is the release. And most leaders don't like to release because they feel like they're losing something. And we don't release because we feel like people won't care about it like we care about it. Here's the reality. When you're small, you have no problem giving people responsibilities. Once it gets bigger, you feel like someone's going to mess it up. I'm not going to let you do the graphics. You're going to mess it up. No. I'm not going to let you do the welcome. Like every senior pastor, you just want to keep hogging all the welcomes, all the offerings, all the announcements. Sit down. Shut up. Let somebody else do it. It's got to be bigger than just you. I know you're the main worship leader. Do you have to lead every song? We're tired of hearing from you. We love your voice. It's amazing. But what happens when you get sick and no one else got trained? What happens when we need another campus, but we don't have no one to pull from? Whatever you're doing, we need three of you right now. You play the drums, we need three of you. You make graphics, we need three of you. You do films, we need three of you. You're a great leader, we need three of you. You do communication, we need three of you. You do good social media, we need three of you. Because if we want to grow and we want to change, we need more of you. We can't end it with you. We need three of you. Look, you're not releasing them to take care of your baby. You're releasing them to take care of his. Let me say it again, because some of you didn't catch that. When you release people to do the work, you're not releasing them to take care of your baby. You're releasing them to take care of his. This is Jesus' church. This is his ministry. It's not mine. This is his worship team. It's not mine. This is his children's ministry. It's not mine. When you die, it will keep going. Together Church is Jesus' church. It's not mine. I get to steward what he's entrusted to me. And my job is to give him a great return. This is not my church. I'll be long forgotten one day, but his church will live on. We're all seated in someone else's sacrifice, people we don't even know. They didn't build their thing. They built his thing. See, what I've learned about the releasing is most people release without the right rally. We get people and we send them, but they don't have the heart, they don't have the sound, and they don't have the vision. All they have is a hand. So they can move the fader, but they don't move people. They can make a kid feel good, but neglected the volunteer they were serving with because they saw children's ministry as kids, which it is about kids. But the ministry doesn't stop with kids. It's also with the people I'm serving with because we're a group that serves kids. And if your marriage falls apart, it doesn't matter how much I love these kids, they're going to lose a leader. And I can't afford to let you go down at the same time. We teach people how to do a job, but not how to build people. This is where you have to get the rally right. Most people just release people, and then it ends up kicking us in the butt because we didn't see or think through that they don't have the heart, they don't have the vision, they don't have the culture, they don't have any of that. So, in the sense of releasing people, because some people are like, well, when do I release and why do I release and how do I release? Let me just give you a couple things. You release by letting them share. You don't have to give them everything, but maybe just a piece. Maybe just a part. Maybe just one thing. Maybe it's, hey, can you set up the chairs? Maybe it's, hey, can you call the people? Can you do the schedule? Like, come on, let someone schedule, for crying out loud. You're not the chief scheduler, the best scheduler of all time. Like, just give some responsibility. Someone can push the up arrow key on ProPresenter just like you. Like, someone could get up there and pray after the worship just like you. You let them share. Second thing is, you let them fail. What's crazy is the greatest leaders often forget they weren't. Like, if you walked into your building, you probably wouldn't even take a chance on you. Like, when I think about all the things I put our church through, stuff I said, taking offerings. Why did I say that? I said that. Well, I took an offering. I never got to do an offering ever again because of what I said. I led worship like that. I did that. I said the Lord told me to do that. They loved me through that. I talked to a volunteer like that. I corrected them like that. They never came back to church. I got to keep coming back to that church. They led me through that. They loved me through that. Like, if you're expecting to release someone and then never to make a mistake, you're wrong. You've got to release them, let them share, but also let them fail. They're going to fail. It's just part of it. But then you have to release them by letting them learn. To let them learn means they have to be put in positions where they don't get it right and you can navigate them to how to get it right. Where they didn't do it all the way, but you can help them do it all the way. Releasing them doesn't mean walking away and never looking, never checking. It just means empowering them to do what God put in you to do. The hardest thing for a leader to do is to typically let go, but I promise you that if you will recruit, rally, and release, you'll have a greater echo. You'll have more people doing what you're doing, and your church will grow because everything that's healthy grows. And when you build people just to build people, that build people is going to grow. We got a couple minutes for questions. If anyone wants a couple questions, I know we got a couple minutes. I hogged up a lot of time, but I want to make sure that if anyone got a question on any of those things, I hope that helped. Did that help anybody today? Five people? I'm glad. You got to come quick. We're running out of time, but I want to be able to answer anything I can in this segment.
Thank you for showing us how to tell stories. That was powerful, man. Just, we were pulling that off of you. When do you rally during service? Do you have rally points, like when you gather volunteers? Some practicals on when you do rally, when you tell that story. Is there anything on that?
Yeah, I think sometimes for me, I try to rally in every message that I communicate. So there's probably going to be some rally point within there. Because I'm constantly, in everything I do as a leader, you got to think I'm always recruiting, I'm always rallying, I'm always releasing. So I probably would even think through that even in my messages. It's probably going to be that way. I'm trying to draw people to Jesus. I'm trying to encourage people to live for Jesus. I'm trying to release them to go get more people. That's going to be in the back of my mind every time. But we do that. We also do these things called huddles with our volunteers. And that time, there should be a couple moments where they can share a win or something that has happened. But some of that is, it's got to be ingrained in the culture. If it's something, people duplicate what you celebrate. So if it's something that you do and you celebrate it in other people, before you know it, people begin to share the story. So the biggest thing is your church has to create a container that can hold the story. Because the sherry stored out of context could be very damaging, out of season. So you got to be able to contain the story. And people got to feel at liberty to be able to share some of that stuff with removing the names, removing the faces, but to be able to share the principle of what's happening. But if you could do that, those stories would be shared. In our church, they're shared all the time. Yeah, right over here, sir.
Other than assuming that you have a dream team party at certain points through the year, maybe one or two, and not just the times that you mention it in your weekly communication, but can you talk about the specific schedule that you use for your team leaders and inside those teams from team leaders to team members for those meetings?
For the meetings? Okay, so we do like these mini huddles, and we try to do once a month gathering with teams specifically, and they're small. And when you're a larger church, you got to break stuff down to smaller pieces. So we do once a month gatherings, and they're really just hangouts to try to build relationships. There's quarterly meetings that those leaders will have with other leaders, and information and a vision, culture, that's all going to be transported down. So systematically, probably our leaders are meeting there's so many tiers that it's hard for me to really articulate. But at the lowest level, if you're a volunteer, you're going to be empowered every weekend before you serve. And once a month, you're going to gather together and celebrate what God has done through the ministry, keeping the stories fresh, and just enjoying the time of others. The higher you go up in level of leadership, you're going to meet more frequently. That makes sense?
Hi, thank you. When it comes to the recruiting phase, how does the time management work when it's those one-on-one, trying to build up relationships, but you're also homeschooling these kids and you also have a, you know, you're all doing all these things? I find to be stretched very thin when it comes, it's almost overwhelming to think of how much time to invest in this recruitment stage. So I was just wondering if you could speak into that a little bit more.
You can't think of it as isolated time. Okay. It's as you're going. You go grocery shopping,
right.
Ask someone to come with you.
Okay.
What people think is, when I'm asking someone to do something with me, it's a disservice to them. It's not true. So like I ask people, want to go work out? It's not a workout. We're going to lift weights. I'm going to teach you how to be a man. You want to come help me move gravel at my house? I'm not trying to solicit workers. I'm trying to build people. So you've got to, this is the worst thing that you can do, is itemize building people. You've got to say, this is my life. This is how I live. So I'm going to the store anyway. You want to come with me? Now, I know I'm going to have to deal with my kids, but while we're going through hey, how's your marriage going? How's this going? Oh, it's cool. Oh, awesome. You know, you should probably think, have you ever thought about this? So, like, my staff will know anytime I tell them, you want to go to lunch with me? They don't even have to be hungry. Guess what they're doing? They're getting in the car. They don't even want food. You know what they want? They want 5 minutes to El Reconcito, the Mexican taco van, because they know within that 5 minutes, they're going to get something from me that doesn't come from a meeting. I hardly meet with my staff in meetings. We do life together. And so I just invite them. This is what Jesus did. You want to fish for people?
Okay.
We're going over here. And the people that want it, come. So the people in your world that need your influence,
yeah.
They don't care what it is.
Okay.
You're making crafts? Come make crafts.
Yeah. That is such a, I'm just going to say, that is such a like a relief, like a heavy
yeah.
Lifted because the thought of having to have
one more meeting, one more schedule.
Yes. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
About it. It's so overwhelming. So
yeah. Building people. Listen, I want you to know this. Building people was never meant to be a burden.
Yes,
it's never meant to be a burden. What we feel, though, is we feel like we're burdening them to come with us. It's not the case. Your leader could have asked you to do anything. You'd have been, I'm there. You need me fold laundry? I'm there. Right? I would. So just realize what you would be to someone else. There's people that want to be. You see what I'm saying? Looks like we're done. See you guys. Have a good afternoon. Lord, love you. We'll see you tonight. Come back tonight. Come early. Come ready. God bless you.